another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream,
hello, you can holler. Another edition of the Survival Podcast. Matter. One man's view of the changing world and changing economic times. The things that we can do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Today's show, we're going to try something a little bit different, folks. What I did, so I went around the internet a little bit into various survival blogs, mostly blogs that have linked to me at one time or another, and figured I would do them a favor by giving them a little bit of publicity with my show. So I picked up 5 stories that I found that other survivalists have been blogging about this week, and I'm going to give you kind of a rundown on what they covered, tell you where they came from, and then in the show notes, I'm going to provide links to the actual stories so that you can check out these other blogs. And I figured if the other people in our community are discussing this, then it might be interesting to my users. So that's kind of the direction we're going to take for today's show. But before I go into the format of today's show, I would like to answer a few questions and concerns that I've gotten by email this week. If you didn't catch the show last day or two last week, you may have missed me telling you that I was going to be on vacation. I've gotten several emails from folks that are like, you know, it's been 3 days and there hasn't been a new show. Is everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I went on vacation from Friday through Monday and didn't get a show out Tuesday. I actually got the show recorded Tuesday, but couldn't actually publish it till Wednesday. So we're going to have a short week this week with 3 shows this week, and this is the last one of the week. And nothing was wrong, just occasionally even podcasters take vacations, and if you've heard the earlier shows this week, you know about my vacation and some marriage survival advice that I gave out, which was part of why my wife and I took some time away together. So that's really all that was going on. The stormtroopers didn't come get me or anything, and I haven't gotten tired of podcasting and not going anywhere. I'm going to be here for a long time doing shows on a daily basis. The other thing I want to continuously remind you guys is please participate at the website. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, you know, however you say it, survivalpodcast.com, and, you know, comment on the various episodes. If you have questions for me or suggestions for shows, use the contact us page, and you can get a hold of me that way. I'm going to go ahead and set up an email address for my listeners that I'm only going to be giving out on audio on the show. But I haven't done that yet, so I can't do it. But I do want to hear from you guys, and I want you guys to participate and have discussions with each other as well. I'm trying to put together a community here of like-minded individuals that discuss these things. And a lot of you guys out there have been giving me suggestions and sending me things by email and making comments that have helped me make the show better. So please keep doing that. Also, remember, we do have our listener appreciation contest running. We're about to hit 500 subscribers, and the goal is 1,000. When I hit 500, I've got some books that I wrote. Actually, any book I wrote, I've got multiple copies. We hit 500, I'm going to give out my first set of prizes. I'm going to have 5 copies of that book to 5 individuals. And I've decided the people that win those books are not going to come out of the drawing for the iPod. So, if you win a book or any of these other secondary prizes I find, you're still going to have a shot at the iPod. So I want to keep the exciting rate up to the end of the contest. So please do join our listener appreciation contest and help me spread the word. Just tell people about the show. Get them a little bit interested and ask them to have a listen. Maybe shoot them an email with a link. If you're a part of a forum or a community online already, you might want to mention us there. Those types of things. Please don't spam for me. But if you can help me spread the word about the show, we'll make it more successful, and that will help me do a better job for you guys. Great. So let's see what other people were talking about this week. The first story that I found from the Ignorance is Futile blog. And I love the title, the Ignorance is Futile blog. And, again, there'll be a link in the show notes to this specific story on that blog. But the story is basically the government might have a massive surveillance program in use for a national emergency, being in quotes. And, there's a quote here from a senior government official, but they are not identified. So I don't know if I believe the quote or not, but if it's true, it's kind of chilling. It says, according to a senior government official, they're just a database of Americans who often, for the slightest, most trivial reason, are considered unfriendly and in time of panic might be incarcerated. 8 million of us, only 300 million people in the United States. So basically 2 to 3% of us are in a database that says, hey, if stuff goes wrong, these guys might be people you want to keep an eye on. Maybe you need to lock them up. That's a little bit scary, folks. I mean, I'm not big on the whole police state conspiracy thing, not to the hilt like some people are. I do believe our liberties are rapidly eroding. I do believe we can end up there. I don't know that it's a conspiracy. I think it's a bunch of misguided individuals that keep sticking their nose where it doesn't belong. If they keep doing it long enough, the ultimate result is going to be a very oppressive state. But if they're really doing this, if they're keeping people in a database, especially, you know, we have to temper anything we read in the blogosphere, right, with a reality check. Especially when it's not, you know, this didn't reference, I couldn't find any, like, credible press source. I didn't see anybody named here. So, you know, we do have to temper this a little bit, but, you know, it's not unreasonable to think that we might be into a situation like this by now. And the reasoning behind it would be quite simple. The stuff that I've been telling you guys about, why this economy's in trouble, where this nation's headed economically, I'm not a genius that's able to figure this out. I mean, it's the writing's on the wall. And if I know it, and you know it, then odds are our government officials know it, and they're probably worried about what's going to happen when this thing does hit, and it's going to hit. And like I said, it's not if it's going to hit. It's almost not even when it's going to hit anymore, because the answer to when is soon. It's how hard and what the response by the nation is going to be. How many people are just going to get by any way they can, and how many people are going to get violent about it. That's the key, and that's, we don't know the answer to that. Because we've seen these type of economic collapses in other nations, and it hasn't always turned into, you know, massive bloodshed. And the American people are a fairly civilized group of folks. We have some vermin out there, but the vermin pretty much behave like vermin all the time. I think the number will grow, but I don't know if they'll go over the edge. But, folks, you know, we've heard things about detention camps being built and different things like that. And I think we've had enough video of those locations to know that they're real. And this is why I think that when we do end up, if we end up in a real shit that hit the fan scenario, the best thing you can do is keep your head down and take care of your family and your friends. You know, sticking your head up into that scenario, trying to make a big name for yourself, or trying to be, you know, a massive offender or something, you're probably going to get hauled off. And this is just one more indication of that. So, folks, I mean, one of the things you have to really think about in your survival plan is what we call OPSEC, or operational security. Now, I'm on the internet every day broadcasting to you guys, so I'm kind of sticking my neck out there, but I figure someone's got to do it. But I don't really give directions to our location in Arkansas. I guess anybody who really wanted to find us could. I think anybody who really wanted to find anybody today could. But I believe that if we end up in a bad time and we go there, there's probably nobody going to come looking for me. So, you know, just have a plan of what you're going to do in these scenarios. And don't, you know, there's a few of you out there I've seen in forums that have fantasies of reliving the glory days of like a Red Dawn scenario or something. And folks, it's probably not the way to make it through. Survival is about taking care of yourself and taking care of your family so that you are there for them. Just please remember that. And this is an interesting thing to think about here. Another blog that I've read quite a bit, I just did a review of the author's book, which was Patriots Surviving the Coming Collapse earlier this week. It's the Survival Blog. And the Survival Blog had a post, a little bit different, a little bit, I don't know, a little bit lighter, because we just had kind of a big, heavy thing here, and I got more coming for you. Let's throw something a little lighthearted in. And basically, somebody wrote in to the blog staff and said, hey, one of the suggestions I'd like to make for people in their survival prep is ramen noodles. They're dirt cheap. I don't remember what the price he quoted, but I know you can get huge pieces of these things for, like, next to nothing. And, you know, the answer from the survival blog was basically, you know, they don't really have that great of a nutritional profile, but I guess if you throw a little bit of meat in there with them, it kind of helps them out. They do feel kind of fulfilling, and they are cheap. But make sure if you're storing them or any other pasta or grain product, that you're storing them in buckets or something solid, because they're very susceptible to rodents. I think that's probably true, but folks, I'll tell you what, I happen to agree with the guy that wrote in. Ramen noodles have a place in your survival planning. The fact that they have little flavor packets for self-contained or easy to transport, they will last damn near forever. Because basically what they are is stale noodle that becomes unstale when you boil it. They are dirt cheap, and I think if you're in a situation where you're kind of getting bored with eating the same old food, there's something that can be kind of, you can create a lot of variety with them. So here's an idea for you folks. Anybody that has a recipe for ramen noodle usage, right? Something you don't dump it in the pot of boiling water and have the packet. Post your recipe in this episode in the comments section. And let's just see how many people have different ways for using these things and how they can be combined with other foods that store well, especially. Like, one of the things that I know that they combine very well with, if you have, like, dried green beans and carrots that you can rehydrate in a soup, well, they work great as a vegetable to this. So that's just one example. You can even take some fairly thick pieces of beef jerky and make kind of a beef soup with that arrangement. So there's one to get you started, but I'm looking to hear from you guys about different things you know with ramen noodles and how they can be used as a survival food. Certainly not you're going to live on them, but they are good adjunct, and what your thoughts on that are. Now, here's one that's really interesting, and you guys are going to probably think that I'm kind of gloating a little bit due to my personal stance on global warming. And I'm not really gloating because the news here is actually a lot more credible than a global warming problem. It seems a lot more likely to me, and it could be a lot worse for us in the next 20 to 35 years if this prediction comes to pass. And what we're talking about here is basically, forget global warming, we may be ready to enter what's considered what we call a little ice age. Now, this is not the ice age that the loons back in the 80s predicted with their little computer models, where the ice sheets were going to reach down past Pennsylvania like they did during the big, real ice ages. This is a little ice age akin to what happened during something called the Maunder Minimum. And that happened between 1645 1750. Now, I want you to pay attention to this, because what I'm about to lay out for you here is a very compelling reason to expect that this could be a problem. I think it will be. Predicting the future is kind of hard. I don't even think most of the dramas got it right all the time, right? You just forget a bunch of stuff, and sooner or later some of it happened. But this is reality, folks. From 1645 to 1715, Europe, North America, and just about all of the Northern Hemisphere, and much of the Southern Hemisphere near the bottom of the planet, were extremely cold. Now, extremely cold meaning about 2 degrees centigrade lower than normal. But just as the global warming people have been telling us, when you have an average temperature drop of 1 degree, it's a lot more significant than it sounds. And for those of us still in the free world, 2 degrees centigrade, folks, is about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. For the average, of the aggregate all year long average temperature. And that caused the Dark Ages to really become the Dark Ages. Gloomy, that's when people died left and right. We had crop failures left and right. That the planet being that cold is not good for people. Alright? Now, the reason that this is being predicted is we're seeing a lot less sunspot activity. And as I've been saying time and time again, whenever we talk about the environment and this global, warming conspiracy that I think that it is, it's designed to move us into global taxes with a carbon tax that will tax America as the wealthiest nation and redistribute our wealth to the rest of the world. That's what I really think that's all about, folks. And, when you look at it this way, though, this is a little bit more scientifically valid. When there are no sunspots, and I'm going to put a link to a Wikipedia article on the Maunder Minimum for you to take a look at, the recorded number of sunspots during this period of time and how cold it really got. And even NASA's saying we're actually going to hit a really heavy solar spot activity level around 2012, but they're saying after that it's going to drop way off as well. That's basically we're going to come back into the peak of the maximum, and then we're going to decline. With those solar spots going away, we are going to see a drop in temperature. Now, if the global warming people are right, maybe we'll have an offset. I just don't think the global warming people are right. And this is an observatory here that I'll also link to that's been watching solar activity for 200 years and recording it for 200 years now. That's a long time. It's a lot of historical data. And they're predicting that this cooling period will last about 20 years. and will be, again, about an average drop in temperature of about 2 degrees centigrade. So that's something that we're going to really have to think about, and people in the northern climates, you know, the northern United States really may have to think about, and we have to, you know, kind of, how does this affect the peak oil thing? When it's cold, people burn more oil, because a lot of people are still heating their homes with fuel oil, especially in the northeastern United States. It's going to put even greater demands on petroleum, and we're already short supply on fuel. So this is not good. So I'm not really smug about it, just because it does kind of reinforce that I've been telling you, the global warming is not what you think it is, and this is just one reason that it might get a lot worse. Now, my other thought on this is I want to explain to you guys my real feeling about global warming. I believe it is happening. I believe it's driven mostly by solar activity, and man has a very small but definite impact on it. I also believe that global warming can cause global cooling in another way. You see, folks, the Earth circulates its heat from the equator to the poles with currents that run through the ocean, and as we do have the planet warm, regardless of whose fault, if it's nature's fault or man's fault or both, whatever the reason, doesn't matter. With all that polar ice melting, that stuff's not salt water that froze, guys. That's fresh water. And all that fresh water running into the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans, it can alter the flow of those currents. And when that happens, the heat distribution doesn't happen, and the poles of the planet will then begin to cool very, very rapidly and very, very heavily. And that could also precipitate kind of a global cooling. So we could be entering a natural phenomenon here that is preceded by a warming of the planet and then followed by a very, very cold, cold, dark winter. Will it happen? Don't know. People have predicted stuff like this over and over again. I'm just telling you the science behind this is pretty credible, and yet another reason to be prepared. Speaking of peak oil, I found an article at the, let's see, where did I find this article? Offgridsurvival.com. And it was the CNN is actually talking about peak oil. Which is kind of interesting. It's like we're starting, the survival community is starting to get some exposure on regular media. People are starting to take this stuff seriously. And this was a really cool little story, and it had an embedded video from CNN that I recommend you watch. But basically, what they did is they went out and talked to this guy. He's an older guy. I think he's a school teacher, if I remember right. And he actually has a little solar-powered car, which looks like kind of a modified golf car with some bigger wheels on it. The wheels kind of reminded me of like a wagon or like an old-time bicycle or something, but not quite that big, but like those big spoked wheels. Or maybe even like an old car, like a Model A or something like that. They're kind of neat. And I guess maybe he used a golf car chassis to do this and put some solar panels on it. Like kind of short distances he runs around on this little car. And he's using a lot less fuel. He has solar panels on his roof. I think he said he's producing 2/3 of his hot water from solar activity, 1/2 of the power his house uses, and he uses his little solar car for about half of his commuting for short distance stuff. And he's got a garden, and he's got some food stored up. And that's a pretty good little story. And again, it's at the Off-Grid Survival blog. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes to it. And that's a blog I recommend you check out. It's pretty cool. And it's just interesting to me that we're finally starting to get some exposure. In fact, I was just recently interviewed myself by a magazine called Details that is doing a major article on people that are considered normal people, people like me that drive to work every day, that hold down normal jobs, entrepreneurs, not eccentrics living out in the middle of the wilderness in Idaho or Montana, everyday normal people that are preparing. And when I did this interview, I learned from the journalist who gave me the interview that there's a lot of closet survivalists out there. She's talked to a lot of people that are prepping all the time, and people around them would have no idea that's what they're doing. So there's more of us out there than I think people realize, and that's a good thing, because the more of us, the better we're going to be able to weather whatever storm it is that finally comes. But anyway, it's a cool video. The guy's a really cool guy. So do check out the show notes at thesurvivalpodcast.com for the show and have a look at that video. The CNN videos tend to not stay around forever like a YouTube one, so you might want to look at that in the next couple weeks, because I tried to find some of the older ones and they're gone after a certain amount of time. So you may want to have a look at that now. Okay. So there's four stories. The fifth one's kind of a doozy, folks. And I said this earlier this week, and I didn't say it with the knowledge that it was being already said by a very credible source. But what we are looking at is, in the next 90 days, roughly, expecting to see at least one major U.S. bank failure. And I found this story on a lot of blogs, but I decided that I would give credit to the Texas Preppers Network for it, because they've been so good to me about linking to my shows and providing me a link to their blog roll and things like that. So of the about 8 blogs that I saw running this story, I decided that's who's getting credit for it, that's who the link will go to. But this is from a highly credible source, folks. In fact, the guy that made these two quotes, which are chilling, it's named Kenneth Rogoff. I think it's Rogoff. It's R-O-G-O-F-F. And he was the former chief economist of the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund. All right? That's a pretty credible guy. He is currently a professor of finance at Harvard. And so this guy is not some fringe guy. He's not a guy out there trying to sell you his gold coins. This guy has no dog in the hunt other than to tell you the way he sees it. And I believe this is the guy that really has his finger on the pulse of the economy. Here's what he said. The worst of the global finance crisis is yet to come. And a large U.S. bank will fail in the next few months as the world's biggest economy hits further troubles. In other words, folks, if you ain't seen nothing yet, this is going to get a lot worse. And if you listen to my podcast from earlier this week, then that almost sounds like exactly what I told you. And I got to be honest with you, I've never heard of this guy until yesterday when I did some research for today's show. So I think I'm in sync with this guy, and I believe he's a hell of a lot more credible than me. And he could probably back up the reasons that the worst is yet to come better than I can. I just look at everything around me and the signs of what's going on, and I try to be optimistic, and I can't with the economy anyway. So here it is. And then further, Mr. Rogoff stated, we're not just going to see a mid-sized bank go under in the next few months. We're going to see a whopper. We're going to see a big one. One of the big invested banks or big banks. That's a quote. So what he's saying is it's going to be a big bank. It's going to be, you know, and I don't want to say any names because then they'll be like, well, Jack Sprinkle said sold to a bank's going to collapse. But what he's saying is one of these big banks, like when you're in Florida and Pennsylvania and in Oklahoma, they have branches all over those places, right? One of these really huge national-level banks we're going to see fail in the next few months. I think we might see more than one fail. In fact, one failing may cause multiple banks to fail. So, again, that's not really good news for our economy, and it's what I've been saying, and it's what I'm going to continue to preach, and I know sometimes you want me to just talk more about general preparations and what we need to be doing and all, but I thought this was a good break, and I'm going to keep coming back to reasons you need to take your preparations seriously, reasons it's more important to store food, water, and have evacuation plans than it is to modify a gun. Okay, to make a gun more modified, suitable for battle use, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, folks. And don't you? I mean, God knows, I love to tinker with my guns. But if I have to prioritize right now of what are the most important things that I can be doing, it's going to be making sure that I'm going to be able, in a very, very dark time, it might be really cold financially and climatically, to make sure that I can put food on the table every day for my family, to make sure that we do not lose our home, to make sure that we do not lose the wealth that we have, right? And to make sure that we have prepared for the worst, so if the worst doesn't come and it's just bad, we can live pretty good, all right? And those priorities come over camouflage clothing, web gear, and artillery fire. I'm telling you, folks, it's just the way you have to prioritize things. Remember, always, you should be prioritizing yourselves from a standpoint of disaster of personal first, local, then regional, then national, then global. That's your order of priority. The most likely disaster you're going to experience is going to be affecting you and not your neighbor. And the next most likely is going to affect you and your neighbors, but not people on the other side of your county. And the next most likely is going to be affecting your county or your state, but not the whole country. And the next most likely is going to affect us here in America, but not everybody everywhere else in the world. And if we have a global disaster, well, you know, it might not matter. So those are your priorities. Make sure you keep that in focus as you're making your decision. I know a lot of people feel like getting ready, getting prepared for whatever may come is like some big monumental thing that can never be accomplished, and only wealthy people can do it. And I don't believe that. I believe that anybody that prioritizes this can do it a little bit at a time. And this is really not about preparing. I almost hate the word prepper, right? I almost don't like that word. I almost don't like the word survivalist. This is the way, folks, what we do now, what our community does now, is what everybody in this country did, and some of them did a heck of a lot more, average everyday people, from about 1900 back to the foundation of this nation, okay? If you went around homes in 1885 in the United States of America, everybody had cellars and food put up, and every home they did canning, jarring, pickling. Everybody had a garden, okay? Now, there were some people that were city people even back then, but I'm saying the majority of Americans were preppers, and they didn't call themselves preppers. They prepped for reality because there wasn't 7-Eleven everywhere. There wasn't McDonald's everywhere. And all we have to do is, using all the resources we have today, which is so much more than those folks had back then, basically live the way that they did from a fundamental standpoint of making sure there's food for the winter, making sure that we're planting a garden in the spring, we're growing a second garden for a fall crop, right? Making sure that there's extra food in the pantry because I might not be able to go get some tomorrow. These are things everybody did. And it's just high time that America went back to its roots, which involved living close to the land, having some interaction with the land. And we need to start teaching our kids that, folks, that food comes from the ground. Not from Kroger, you know, not from Tom Thumb, not from Publix Supermarket or whatever, you know, grocery store is in your area. That's not where food comes from. It comes from the ground. It grows in a plant and you pick it. And if it's meat, it eats food from the ground and then we eat it. Okay? And we need to be teaching people that. We need to make them cognizant of it because it reinforces the finite nature of things. There is not an infinite supply of food. And you take a kid or a young person into a grocery store, and they see miles and miles and miles and aisles of food, and they think to themselves, hey, you know what? There's always going to be food. Look at all this food. This food can't possibly run out. They can't even conceive of it because they don't get where the food comes from. So make sure you're teaching that lesson. It's very, very important. And I hope you like today's show. And I might do this maybe once a week or once every other week, kind of an around-the-net type tour. And if you have a blog, and if you cover stories like this, and you want to suggest one for a show like this, you know, you can contact us, page, or if you already have our email, email us and let us know about it. I'll consider putting it on if I think it'll work for a podcast. And I can't promise I'm going to do all of them. I'll do my best to do most of them. And give you a little bit of publicity. And if you like this format for a show, if you want to see me do this on a regular basis, once a week, once every other week, hey, let me know, because I want to give my audience what they want and continue to prepare. Remember, what we're here to do is learn how to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't, and I'm going to preface that today, learn how to live a better life if times get tough, really tough, or extremely tough, or really, really, really tough.
You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.